This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So Dr. Bloom is a biophysical chemist, a mountaineer, and author of Breaking Trail, A Climbing Life. So she comes to us with quite an interesting background. And she's currently working to bridge the gap between scientific research and public policy to help create a healthier, safer environment. She's a scientific advisor for California AB 706, which was legislation to reduce fire retardant chemicals. And her research and her continuing work in policy has had a big effect. So we're glad to hear from Arlene today. Thanks.
Okay, well, it's great to see all of you here. We're all doing similar work, I believe, to protect health. I'm a chemist and the executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute, and we're going to be talking today about how scientific research can inform policy. And our model is to work with industry who shares problems around chemicals, to partner with research scientists like Heather Stapleton, who we often work with, write peer-reviewed papers, white papers, then communicate scientific results to decision makers, and that can lead to changes in policy to protect health. And we think that having scientists take their research and use it to protect health is a very fruitful endeavor. Well, the whole area of flame retardants changed a lot last May with a series of Chicago Tribune front page stories. How many of you have seen any of these or heard about them? Okay, a good number of you. Well, the subtitle on this paper, A Deceptive Campaign by Industry Brought Toxic Flame Retardants into Our Homes and into Our Bodies, and the Chemicals Don't Even Work as Promised, is in some ways a summary of the current situation. But the reality is, actually, way back when flammability standards were set forth, I think they were set forth with good intention. The deceptive campaign, as Mark Leno knows well, has been to maintain them in spite of information about the harm and lack of benefit they might cause. So if we go back to the 70s, that's when flammability standards first came about. And I think standards, after doing this work for a number of years, it's the standards that are the problem, not the chemicals. So in 1972, a standard was set for baby products by the CPSC. 73, a furniture standard here in California. 76, a building code standard for foam plastics. And when they were set, nobody actually checked to see, do these work? Do they provide a fire safety benefit? Everyone thought, well, we'll put some flame retardants in. It's bound to help. And nobody said, these flame retardants, do they cause a problem? So I first got involved in this back in the 70s, where I worked, Bruce Ames at Berkeley, who some of you may have heard about, was on my PhD committee. And he asked me if I would look at the flame retardant in kids' pajamas. He said it was 10% of the weight of the pajamas that all the children in America were wearing, and he thought the chemicals might get into the children and they might be a problem. So we found a child who'd never worn pajamas with Tris. Her mom bought her pajamas in England. We put her in the Tris pajamas. The next morning, there were breakdown products in her urine, and they were cancer-causing breakdown products. They were known carcinogens back in the 70s. And so every child in America pretty much was wearing these pajamas. Then we ran a mutagenicity test. It was one of the strongest mutagens we'd ever measured. It changed DNA. We thought it was likely to cause cancer. So we wrote a lead article in Science magazine way back in 1977. And I think the subtitle of this article is somewhat unusual. What do almost all scientific studies recommend at the end? What? More study. We had done two experiments. We said the main flame retardant in children's pajamas is a mutagen and should not be used. And that's a really strong thing for scientists to do, but that is our model at the Green Science Policy Institute. We believe maybe do more than two studies, but at some point scientists need to make strong and public statements, and when they make these statements, things change. Scientists are very trusted and believed, and we have to get beyond more study. So January 77, we published a lead article in Science, and unfortunately, everything in this article is still pretty much true today. And 3 months later, Tris was banned from kids' pajamas. And that's my model of what should happen. When you have good science, things change. Now, that was brominated Tris. When things change, when things are banned, industry wants to keep things as similar as possible. So brominated Tris is banned. What do you think the replacement would be? Chlorinated Tris, of course. So we did another experiment. It was a mutagen. We wrote another article in Science. Chlorinated Tris was removed from pajamas. Yay, right? Some of you might have worn those pajamas, but only for a year or two. Or your parents, who knows? Anyway, so it was gone. But the same chemical, chlorinated Tris, is the most used chemical in our furniture today. It's at it's at pound levels, probably in half of your furniture. I know a few people, like Sarah Jansen has a Tris couch, right? Anyone else here know they have a Tris couch? Probably about half of you do. And suddenly you're saying, why should I have a pound of cancer-causing Tris in my couch that's continually going out into dust and ending up in my body? And the reason is another standard that happened in the 70s. In 1975, California launched TB117. So how many people have heard of TB117? Just about everybody. You great. Well, when you go home, you can check your couch. It probably will say TB117. It's a small open flame standard. It says the foam inside your couch will not burn for 12 seconds when exposed to a very small flame. But if you do a thought experiment, you think about what happens if you drop a candle on your couch, what burns first? The fabric, you have a large flame, the foam burns in a couple seconds, and when things burn, normally you get carbon dioxide in water. In the presence of flame retardants, you get multiples times more soot, smoke, and carbon monoxide, which is what kills you in fires. So this is a standard that is not protective against fires. A lot of fire toxicity and also human toxicity, because the chemicals are always in our homes. And it's not only followed for furniture in California, it's followed across the country, and many other products follow it. We had a nursery school study where all the sleep mats in 20 nursery schools in the East Bay had flame retardants in them, even though there's no requirement. Mattress pads, there's no requirement. Half do. Pillows, there's no requirement. Most of the foam products in America follow TB117, even though it's not required. So just to jump to the good news, if you're sounding depressed, is we'll hear more about it, but Mark Leno, who will be speaking, led a brilliant 5 years of attempts for legislation defeated by chemical industry lobbying. But last June, Governor Brown has taken a strong step and directed state agencies to change the standard. So we will have more fire safety without toxic chemicals starting in June, unless the chemical industry manages to interrupt what Governor Brown is doing, and I think he's pretty determined. So the third standard in the 70s was the Uniform Building Code for Foam Plastic Insulation, and that's polystyrene, polyurethane, polyisocyanurate in building insulation in the walls. And it turns out that walls, you have to have a 15-minute barrier before you hit the insulation, a thermal barrier against flashover. So by the time you hit the insulation, you've had a raging fire in your house for 15 minutes. Having flame retardants in the insulation just makes the fire more toxic. It's a third case of where there's no benefit, and about 60 million pounds a year of flame retardants are put into our buildings. I've just been at Green Build all week, where the green building community is very concerned about this. I've been a plenary speaker. This is a meeting of about 30,000 green builders who really want to get the toxic flame retardants out of buildings. So these things all happened in the 70s, perhaps not with malice, aforethought, but now is the time to do something. And indeed, in terms of green building, we have a paper going online November 26th, Flame Retardants and Building Insulation, a case for reevaluating building codes. And what it really means is we want to change the international building code so you can have more fire safety in buildings without flame retardants. But it's going to be challenging. Okay, so the problem that leads to all this is we all know, usually I say, how many people think that the government is protecting you from chemicals and products? And most people raise their hands, but I'm sure if I say that here, anybody think that? Right, this is an informed audience. And you know that we have one law, TSCA, that was passed in 76, where 62,000 chemicals were grandfathered, and even asbestos cannot be regulated, which kills thousands every year. New chemicals, no health data is required. Most have new data at all. And when you hear this big number of chemicals, maybe you want to sort of put your head down and say, there's nothing I can do. But this is a slide for builders, but I just showed it at Greenbuild yesterday. But I think in buildings and other places, there are four classes, and they're not everything in this class, but if we deal with these four classes, we're going to go a long way towards solving our problems. They're volatile organics, VOCs, like formaldehyde and benzene. They're metals like lead, mercury, cadmium, arsenic. We know they're bad. We're trying to get rid of them. They're SVOCs. That's what I work on, semi-volatile organics. They come out of products, drop into dust. They're flame retardants, stain repellents, and then there are other endocrine disruptors like phthalates and BPA. So that, if we could deal with those, that, and I think thinking of four classes is a lot more promising than thinking of 62,000 chemicals. If we can deal with those four classes, get them out of our homes, our bodies, our children's bodies, we can all be healthier. So flame retardants. This meeting has a lot about PBDEs. And does that sound like alphabet soup to some people? So I am a chemist, and I think chemistry is actually fun and interesting and useful, so I'm going to teach you what a PBDE is. So when you have a ring like this, does somebody know what that's called? A phenyl ring. Phenyl ring. When you have two, you have biphenyl, and when you put lots of chlorines around it, you have polychlorinated biphenyl, PCB, not your best molecule. If instead of having a covalent bond, you have an ether bond, then you have, and this is bromine, you have polybrominated biphenyl, two phenyls, ether, and that's PBDE. Two phenyl rings, an ether bond with lots of bromines around. If you burn or oxidize, you get this molecule, dioxins and furans. These are all cancer-causing, quite harmful. This is halfway in between. We teach a class sometimes on chemistry and policy at Berkeley. I asked a professor, do you think our students should be allowed to work with PBDEs? And he said, only in a fume hood with full protective gear. However, PBDEs, if any of you have a couch you bought in California before 2006, there's a good probability it's 5% by weight, that chemical. And they are SVOCs, so they are continually coming out into dust. When we had measurements, 98% of the global usage of what's called pentabDE. Some of you saw Brenda Eshkenazi's paper yesterday about neurological impairments. She's talking about pentabDE. All the epi is on pentabDE because that is what has been used in our furniture since 1975. It's hard to get good human epi, but it's been at pound levels in furniture in California for that long. So what are the health effects? Really quickly, they're long-term ones, endocrine disruption, thyroid problems, neurodevelopmental, reproductive, immune suppression, and cancer from some of the flame retardants. And we have, this is a slide of Linda's, thank you, looking at human health associations, which are recent studies, increased time to pregnancy, lower birth weight babies, children, as we saw in the paper yesterday, with decreased IQ, altered behaviors. It's a series of neurological and reproductive effects, as we would expect from the animal studies. Now, at hearings in Sacramento, Mark Leno and I have heard there's no peer-reviewed science to show any harm from flame retardants, so we made the next graph. This is the number of scientific papers on PBDEs. There is an industry of scientists studying them. These are not all about health harm. They're about rising levels of exposure in creatures around the globe, because even though they were produced in North America, they have become global pollutants. And there is an overwhelming body of science, but all this science never usually reaches decision makers. And that is what I think is the critical point. You can have that much science, and you can have people in Sacramento saying there's zero science and being believed if the scientists aren't there to say it's not true. So PBDEs are banned. So we have current retardants, and my associate, Vina, who is sitting here, made this nice slide about substitutions. So remember kids' pajamas? This is the whack-a-mole game. Kids' pajamas had brominated tris. It's a mutagen. Let's have chlorinated tris. It's a mutagen. Now furniture and baby products had pentabDE. It's toxic. let's do Coronatrix again. You know, let's take this thing. Can you believe it had been removed from kids' pajamas in the 70s? And here we've got it back again. It's the number one chemical today, probably, and most of you will have a Coronatrix item in your homes. So it's been listed under Prop 65 as a carcinogen. So now we have Firemaster. Well, it's kind of a secret what's in Firemaster. Heather Stapleton did some preliminary experiments with a small number of rats, and it seems to cause obesity and anxiety. Now she's going to do a big experiment, but this is what we need in our homes. So Firemaster is the current flame retardant of choice. So we have a paper coming out November 28th where we looked at the flame retardants in 102 couches before the ban on Penta. And this is brand new data. You can see before the ban, this is the whole country, about a quarter had no flame retardants. More than a third had Penta, and actually a bunch had Tris. They just kept using it, and then their mixtures. Since the ban, what do we have today? We have over half Tris. Penta has gone away. Firemaster is coming up. And then we have some new non-halogenated flame retardants that unfortunately look bad. So all the choices look bad. And how are we exposed to these retardants? Through house dust, in our work, our vehicles, and increasingly through our diet. As time goes on, right now our exposure is dust in our homes, but the dust washes out of our homes into sewage treatment plants where it goes into the ocean, goes up the marine food chain. The sewage treatment materials are spread on soil, so it ends up in plants. And right now, we want to capture the toxic flame retardants in our homes and do something so they do not end up back in our food supply. Flame retardants are continually coming out of products. You don't have to sit on them. It's something called fugacity, where things go from high concentration in your couch to low concentration in the air. So it's continually coming out of your furniture, going into the air, dropping into dust. Levels outside California in other countries are low, other states, and here we are in California with much higher levels. And in our bodies, the CDC has found Californians have twice the level in our bodies of people in other states. Sadly enough, toddlers have about three times the level of their mothers because they get the mother's level through the placenta. The chemicals are lipophilic. They go into breast milk. And then, of course, they're in dust, hand to mouth. Cats have about 100 times the level of humans. Can you guess why? They lick their fur. They lick the dust. So my cat got hyperthyroid disease, went from being a very fat cat to a skinny cat. We ended up in a veterinary epidemiology study in Illinois where they checked the level in my house dust and in my cat, and it was the highest they'd ever seen off the scale because I live in California. It was an Illinois study. And so that's my couch. And the level in my dust, which was phenomenally high, 97 parts per million, 4 years later is 3 parts per million. And the good news is I got my body burn measured by near toe at DTSC, and I have an average body level of flame retardants 4 years after getting rid of my couch. And just to note, that couch has no cushions, and we'll tell you another story, but we're doing some really interesting research on 30-year-old couch cushions and what's in them and what's coming out of them. So are the flame retardants efficient? Do they provide fire safety benefit? Well, this is aviation foam. The blue has no retardant. The red has Penta. And the time to ignition, there's 3-second difference. So the flame retardant delays ignition 3 seconds. Normally, when things burn, you get carbon dioxide in water. But in flame retardants, you get twice as much smoke with the flame retardant, 6 times as much carbon monoxide, and 88 times as much soot. So if you imagine you're in a hotel room, you smell smoke, you open the door, you see smoke, you close the door, the carbon monoxide kills you. So no benefit. And this is what we find. This is deaths from small open flame fires, the kind that are treated by TB117. They have not changed appreciably in all the years we've had TB117. So we've put all these chemicals in our couches on the planet. We've provided work for hundreds of scientists to analyze them. Front page stories about children's neurological impairment. No fire safety benefit. Now, the blue line is fires caused by smoldering cigarettes. That's going down. That is still a bigger cause of fire. And if you wondered how the governor has told us we can have more fire safety without flame retardants, the way we do it is we do something about the blue line, which is cigarettes, smoldering cigarettes, and we can do that without chemicals. So we forget about this yellow line, which we've never made any difference with all these, you know, millions of pounds of flame retardants that are going to be on the planet for a very long time to come, and we think about the blue line. And indeed, that's what Mark Leno has done in legislation. We have together had legislation, four bills. They were all excellent, that would have increased fire safety without toxic flame retardants, and they were defeated. I think you'll hear some of the details. We have a researcher here who's going to be telling us about it. Californians for Fire Safety, and they are the three manufacturers of flame retardant chemicals. They spent $6 million on this ad campaign the first year when we had a pretty good chance of changing the standard. Remember, increased fire safety, no toxicity. Good deal, except for those three companies. And why is it? Well, the next slide is really the reason we have flame retardants. Albemarle's profits up 377% from an increase in brominated flame retardant sales. And Chemtura will increase prices in all regions by 25% for their advocacy efforts. And the three companies have a global monopoly on the sources of supply, which are the Dead Sea in Israel, Israel Chemicals Limited, and down in Louisiana. And they make new laws requiring flame retardants even when there's no fire safety benefit. And then nobody can meet the laws without their products, so they can charge as much as they want. They've been convicted of price fixing and monopoly twice in the past, but it's incredibly profitable. So sadly enough, this is the real story. So can we have fire safety without harm? And the answer is yes. The first example, Governor Brown's initiative, Smolder Standard for Fabrics, that protects against cigarette fires, and it increases fire safety without flame retardants. What the new standard will be is it says if you drop a cigarette, right now if you have a leather couch, nothing's going to burn through the leather, but you still have to have flame retardants in it. You could have a steel couch, you still have to have flame retardants because it's a test for foam. If you have a test for fabric, and you have a leather couch or a heavy synthetic couch, it's fine. You don't have to do anything. 85% of our couches already pass. 15% will need some kind of alternative so they can pass, but it will not be flame retardants. So this is a simple answer. It doesn't make a big profit for anybody except for all of our health. So we do science to inform policy, and I'm just going to give you a few more examples. Baby products, all these baby products and more were required to meet TB117. Strollers, nursing pillows, there's no cases of fire starting in them. Remember, the flame retardants do not provide a benefit, but we wrote, Heather Stapleton and I and other scientists wrote a paper about, we looked at what were the flame retardants in 100 baby products in ES&T, and it ended up as the top science paper of 2011, because when scientists do policy and it makes a difference, people read and pay attention. So this is a plug for doing science that impacts policy. I don't have time now, but the hardest thing I've ever done, the chemical industry came up with a plan to make all the plastics around all the electronics flame retardant. It would have been an additional 1.7 billion pounds of flame retardants a year. By doing good science, writing a paper, getting it to stakeholders in 40 countries, we were able to stop that initiative. Science is very powerful. So the big idea, and you're the first group I'm telling this has been a big secret, the big idea is to regulate chemicals by class. Right now, we ban brominated TRIS, we get chlorinated TRIS. TSCA reform is the most important thing. It's incredibly important, but it's going to take a while. And meanwhile, maybe we should look at the worst classes. And so we said, what about saying you can't put halogenated flame retardants in consumer products unless you've got some health information? So we did a hazard assessment of 91 flame retardants with David Eastman, a very distinguished head of the toxicology department down at UC Riverside, using all the data there was, and then a lot of modeling, and all 91 received a grade of D or F. And this data is going to be used. I don't have time now, but there's legislation under consideration in both the House, the Senate, and some states to use this data to look at classes of chemicals. Okay, and the project, that was step one, David Eastman's work. Step two is we're working to get lots more data, to fill in the data gaps. We have a scheme where we figure out how to order, store, and analyze the chemicals, and then we have a whole series of scientists around the world doing different tests. And we invite you, if you would like to study flame retardants, we can tell you what the important ones are. We can provide you with free flame retardants, information on solubility, dose. And so we have been able to make a project to really fill in the data gaps. Okay, quickly, what does business think? BIFMA, the Office Furniture Manufacturers Association, worked with us, and the CEOs issued a statement for the elimination of flame retardant chemicals in office furniture. Right now, all office furniture contains flame retardants. Offices are sprinklered. There's no benefit, but the industry is in favor. Staples agrees. We're working with the Home Furnishing Association, the Polyurethane Foam Association. We have an EPA grant to work with business sectors to inform them so they decide to get the flame retardants out of their products, and that's a fast, effective way to do things. I want to invite all of you. In April, there's a big meeting here in San Francisco. Once every 3 years, there's an international symposium on flame retardants. It's here, April 7th to 10th. And on the 12th, we will have our flame retardant dilemma meeting. This is with government, industry, academics to come together. When we had our first meeting back in 2006, I thought we'll have one meeting, we'll share science, the problem will be solved. This is our 19th meeting. We've been having three a year. If you sign our list, we'll send you invitations to all these meetings. If you want to know about flame retardants, or if you have research and you'd like to work with us to learn more about flame retardants, because we think it's one of these low-hanging fruits. I think if we get the flame retardants out of our furniture, our building insulation, our dust, our bodies, we can all be healthier. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.